Good morning, everyone. Her Excellency Meera Shankar, Ambassador of India to USA. Dr. Lael Brainard, Undersecretary of International Affairs, U.S. Department of Treasury. Mr. Stop Talbot, President Brookings Institute. Distinguished members of the audience, a very warm personal welcome to all of you. CII, the Confederation of Indian Industry, is delighted to partner with Brookings Institution for this conference on the U.S.-India Economic and Financial Partnership, and I'm grateful to Stroop for his personal support. We are honored that Her Excellency Meera Shankar could join us for this event. CII has received her full encouragement for all our endeavors in the U.S. Thank you, ma'am. We are also honored that Undersecretary Dr. Lael Brainard could join us and address the distinguished gathering this morning. Given the global financial situation, her presence is indeed a measure of the significance she attaches to India and relationship with India. The global economy remains volatile, and we see pressures emanating from different areas that are adversely impacting the recovery process, ranging from continued difficult political situations in the Middle East, high unemployment in advanced economies, elevated public debts and fiscal stress, and rising prices. Fundamental global imbalances that were at the core of the crisis are yet to be resolved. In India, while we have recovered rather quickly to our high growth path, we are not immune to this fragilities. In fact, due to widening integration with the global economy, India is increasingly vulnerable to such downward forces. The good news is that in our case, slowdown in the GDP growth rate means we go from somewhere around 9% potential to somewhere around 7-8% actual expansion. This is still the second fastest growth rate in the world. Much has changed in India in the last few years. New telecom connections touched 1 million mark in mid-2000. Today, 500,000 new connections are added every single day, and there are 861 million phone subscribers as of April 2010. In rural areas, teledensity that was about 2% a few years ago has gone to about 33%. One in three people in a village has a wireless connection. 2005-06 was a landmark year for India when exports crossed $100 billion. In 2010-11, the figure has multiplied 2.5 times to almost $250 billion. Imports have also risen, and it has risen faster, going up 3 times in 6 years. Such rapid transformational evolutions are the hallmark of the new Indian economy. Whether it's infrastructure or manufacturing or services or the rural economy, we have witnessed dynamism within increasingly compressed time frames. Over the last half year, in tandem with the frailties of the global economy, India too has seen some dissipation of its economic stream as industrial growth and investment sentiments have moderated. Inflation remains intractable at above comfort levels. But despite the tightening of interest rates, CII is confident in the current year GDP growth rate of about 8%. The huge challenges facing the Indian economy, in fact, are what will keep the momentum going. We cannot afford to relax on the income growth path. Infrastructure needs to be built, power, roads, ports, and urban amenities. Education and health services have to be provided. Skill development facilities must be built up. Employment has to be created for 150 million new hopeful entrants to the workforce over the next decade. We see opportunities in this challenge for inclusive growth model currently being followed in opening up new opportunities across multiple dimensions for businesses. For example, in the financial sector, inclusion has been the policy priority to drive income, provide much-needed services, and match savings and investments. In the last year alone, the number of villages covered by banking services have doubled. The number of no-frills accounts increased from 50 million to 75 million in just a year. Innovative models have been used for financial inclusion, such as mobile vans and rural ATMs, kiosks and smart cards, and business correspondence. With these facilities, rural resurgence will gain additional strength. Within this dynamism, India's partnership with US economy is central to its outward orientation. Trade and investment are two-way street. The US's sustained economic engagement with India over the years since our independence has built a solid foundation for current trade and commerce ties. Today, as India rapidly grows and integrates with the global economy, we can be the partner of choice for US businesses in terms of markets for goods and services, new employment opportunities, innovation, and R&D across multiple domains. Every single deal, such as the Boeing deal, is expected to create jobs in the US. As India proceeds on its development journey, let us take the India-US economic and financial partnership to a new plane altogether. Thank you very much, and now I'm inviting Sister Talbot to take over the proceedings and conduct the meeting further. Thank you.
Good morning to all of you. And let me add to the words that you've heard from Chris a welcome to everybody in the room, but particularly to our friends who have come all this way from India. That means you've made a journey of about 7,500 miles, incurred a little bit of jet lag along the way. At least we have some nice weather for you here, and we have some strong coffee. But that 7,500 miles is actually not as much of a distance as it was not very long ago. And that is, of course, thanks in large measure to the way in which the bilateral relationship between India and the United States has improved in so many ways in recent years. But it's also because of the vigorous way in which the private sectors of India and the United States are now engaging. And that, of course, is in no small measure a huge credit to CII. I want to say on behalf of my colleagues at the Brookings Institution how much we have appreciated the chance to work with Chris and the CII team in putting together this event. And, Lael, it's also been a pleasure to work with your team at Treasury, and we're so glad that you could be with us this morning. I have not a double duty, but the double honor of introducing the next two speakers, so I'll be back up here in a few minutes after I've had a chance to welcome Ambassador Shankar. I'm so glad that she could be with us. Meera, it seems like only yesterday we were together. It was actually Friday. It was up in New York City at a Taj Hotel, by the way, sometimes known as the Pierre. We were together there for the annual India Abroad Gala. And it gives me a chance to repeat now something that I said about Meera and to Meera on Friday evening, which is all of us in Washington and throughout this great country are so appreciative of the job that she has done, not only representing India here in the United States, but also the way she has personally contributed to the strengthening of ties between the two countries. And on a parochial level, I should say that we consider you to be a friend of Brookings over on Massachusetts Avenue. As everybody knows, today's conference is a curtain raiser for tomorrow's meeting between Minister Mukherjee and Secretary Geithner. This is an extraordinarily important continuation of the dialogue between these two important representatives of our government. Their purpose, of course, is to find new ways of fostering the engagement between the United States and India in the economic and commercial realm. I might say that I think it behooves think tanks like the Brookings Institution and the counterpart institutions in India to be part of this process of bringing the two countries closer together in the economic and commercial realm. For some years now, Brookings has been working with a number of Indian think tanks and institutions and public policy organizations to jointly analyze trends in the Indian economy. Many of those trends, as Chris said, are very favorable, but also to look at the bilateral and global environment for commerce and investment. And our purpose in the private sector or in the NGO sector, in the think tank sector, is to come up with ideas that will help encourage and accelerate those positive trends, also identify and analyze such obstacles as exist, and Chris did refer to a couple of those, and suggest to our respective governments recommendations on how to reduce or eliminate those obstacles so that we can come up with new ways of taking advantage of the untapped potential in the U.S.-Indian economic and commercial relationship. Just to give you one example, at the Brookings Institution, we have a joint venture with NCAER on an annual publication called the India Policy Forum. A number of our scholars at Brookings are working on various aspects of the U.S.-India relationship. If I weren't blinded, I could probably point to Eshwar Prasad, who's right down here at this first table up here, and you'll be hearing from him during the course of the conference. Two vice presidents of the Brookings Institution, Martin Indyk, who's the head of our foreign policy program, and Kamal Dervish, whom you will be hearing from during the course of the day, and I are making a trip to India in September to strengthen our own work there. For Martin and myself, it's the third trip we will have made in less than a year. Kamal, as I think all of you know, is the vice president and director of our Global Economy and Development Program. He comes from being the administrator of the United Nations Development Program, the finance minister, I would say the salvational finance minister of his native country, which is Turkey, and also was for many years an outstanding figure at the World Bank. At the end of the day, Kamal is going to preside when Minister Mukherjee and Secretary Geithner speak to us for what will be one of the highlights of a very busy and productive day. But now it is my great pleasure to turn the podium over to my friend Ambassador Shankar.
Thank you, Strobe. Of course, Strobe mentioned the function that we both attended in New York on Friday, but modestly did not mention that he was awarded the Friend of India Award at that function. Mr. Gopalakrishnan, Vice President of the Confederation of Indian Industry, Lael Brainard, Undersecretary of Treasury, with whom I have worked closely. It's a great pleasure for me to be here at this CII Brookings Conference, which is a curtain raiser to the financial and economic partnership dialogue, which will take place tomorrow between Secretary Geithner and Finance Minister Pranob Mukherjee. This reflects actually how far our two countries have traveled in terms of the overall relationship and in terms of the economic and financial cooperation that we have forged in the years since the reform of the Indian economy in 1991. India's economy has moved to a higher growth trajectory over the last decade, from 5 to 6%, which is what we were achieving before then, to 8 to 10%. Indeed, for 3 years before the global economic crisis in 2008, we were growing at an average of 9% a year. I think the interesting thing is that since the years of reform, the economy has become broad-based, and growth, which was initially services-led, has also broadened to include other sectors of the economy. There's been a turnaround in manufacturing, which initially underwent some period of restructuring. Today, we see that India has become the world's largest hub for producing small, fuel-efficient cars and for auto components, generics, generic drugs, and of course even wind turbines, where a company, Suzlon, is one of the largest wind turbine producers in the world. Performance during and after the economic crisis was better than expected. Last year, in 2010-11, growth was 8.5%, and even during the worst period of the crisis in 2008, it was in the region of 6.8%. So this reflects a certain feature of the Indian economy, and that is that it is a different growth model to the model that many of the other East Asian countries have followed. It has not been an export-led growth model. And though our exposure to the global economy has increased with increasing trade and investment, growth in India has primarily been driven by domestic savings, domestic investment, and above all, by expansion in domestic demand. We have followed a policy of sustaining high growth, that is 8 to 10% for the next decades and beyond, because that is what we believe we will need to overcome the challenges that we face, including poverty, and ensuring that the demographic that we have, which is overwhelmingly young, can be productively engaged in the economy. We have also followed a policy of making growth inclusive by putting in place programs for reducing the vulnerability of marginalized sections, particularly in the rural areas, and for a focus on education across the entire spectrum, which would be essential to empower those who are not that highly skilled or highly educated to participate in the Indian economy. And we have found that inclusiveness has also been good for growth and has helped to generate demand across a much broader spectrum than just the metropolises of Mumbai, Kolkata, Chennai, or Hyderabad. Increasingly, we are seeing that growth has spread to the Tier 2 and Tier 3 cities, where growth for consumables, for instance, has been touching double digits and is increasingly spreading to the rural areas, which are becoming far more integrated into the national economy, with an emphasis on rural infrastructure and the expansion of service deliveries to the rural areas. Of course, we have challenges, both immediate, medium, and long term. In the immediate challenges, I would rate inflation as the most serious. It is above comfort level, as Mr. Gopalakrishnan said, and the government is making sustained efforts to bring it under control, with the Reserve Bank having tightened monetary policies. But at the same time, I think the government also has to keep a balance to ensure that the growth momentum is not affected. Part of the problem lies in the fact that some of this inflationary pressure is as a result of factors in the global economy. For instance, high oil prices or high commodity prices. And of course, in this context, we have welcomed the decision of the U.S. And others to release oil in the economy and thereby help to moderate oil prices, which is very important for a developing country like India. In the medium to long term, I would say the challenge is that of infrastructure and of social development. And of course, it's also a huge opportunity, as Mr. Gopalakrishnan also pointed out, because we would need to spend about $1 trillion in the next five-year plan, which will be 2012 to 2017, on building infrastructure. Now, some of it will come from government, But we would hope that quite a large portion of it would come from the private sector. As of now, I think about 30% of investment in infrastructure is coming from the private sector and roughly about 70% from government, which is quite good looking at global patterns as well. But we would like to see a greater role for the private sector in the entire spectrum of infrastructure development, whether it's ports, airports, energy, roads. And as India builds these roads, the rail links, the airports, to connect India with itself and with the outside world, it will not only provide momentum to the Indian economy, but also a great business opportunity. And I would encourage U.S. companies to be more active in this sector. In the area of social development, again, there is going to be focus on and huge step up of government outlays as well as private sector outlays in areas such as education, health, nutrition. And again, it's an opportunity to see how institutions and companies can collaborate across the oceans between the United States and India. The G20 coordination was very helpful in moderating the global financial and economic crisis in 2008. Countries agreed to have a coordinated stimulus program, and that helped to take the edge off what could have been a far more serious crisis than it eventually was. But as we have moved away from the immediate compulsions and urgency of the crisis, I think the coordination has become not so robust as it was and perhaps needs to be reinvigorated as we address longer-term issues of structural adjustment which continue to, in a sense, hold back a full and robust recovery. From India's point of view, the new issues that were put on the G20 agenda of food security and addressing the issue of volatility in commodity prices are important because they impact on countries like India and on a range of developing countries who are dependent both either nationally on commodities or in terms of their global trade. So we would hope that the G20's focus on these issues will lead to some stability in these markets. The Indo-US partnership is robust and growing. Trade has increased more than five times in the last decade, from about $10.5 billion in 2001 to nearly $49 billion in 2010. This is trade in goods. Trade in services was around $38 billion. And the interesting thing is that it is broadly balanced, both trade in goods, services, and also investment flows are broadly balanced and growing in both directions. The opportunities for productive engagement and for expanding trade, investment, and technology collaboration is enormous, and we look to the CII, we look to U.S. companies, we look to U.S. businesses to take advantage of the opportunities that a growing Indian economy will afford. Indeed, I would say that any companies which really look to have a global presence cannot afford to be out of the Indian market, because if we continue to grow at the rate at which we have projected for ourselves, then in the decades to come, the Indian economy will become the third largest economy in the world and one of its fastest growing and largest markets. Thank you.
Thank you, Mira. A lot of good news there. It's now my personal privilege to say just a couple of quick words to introduce Lael Brainard. There are three points that I want to emphasize. What she is doing now, and two about what she has done in the past, which give me some personal pride as well as pleasure in being able to call it to your attention. Lael is the highest ranking official in the Department of Treasury dealing full time and thinking all the time about the global economy as Undersecretary of Treasury for International Affairs. She also has one of the most spectacularly beautiful offices anywhere in Washington, which is a small consolation for how hard she has to work when she's in that office. She is, Mira mentioned the G20. Lael is the finance deputy, along, of course, with Secretary Geithner in working with the G20, which is rapidly becoming the sort of de facto board of directors of the global economy and indeed of global governance. Her counterpart is Mr. Gopalan, whom you're going to be hearing from shortly. And Lael comes extraordinarily well prepared for her current responsibilities in two respects. Back in the 1990s, when she and I were colleagues together in the Clinton administration, she had multiple roles. She was the deputy head of the National Economic Council. She was the Sherpa for the G8 process. She worked very closely and with good effect, obviously, on the Asian financial crisis, and she was very much involved in WTO issues. All of us in the room who are from Brookings regard her as a colleague and friend and somebody who epitomizes part of the tradition of Brookings, Brookings scholars going into government and serving their country and their world. She was not just a senior fellow at Brookings, not just the head of our competitiveness project at Brookings, but she was also the founding director of our Global Economy and Development Program, which Kamal Dervish now heads. So in addition to welcoming her here to this conference this morning, I can say to Lael, welcome back to Brookings.
Well, thank you for that incredibly nice introduction. And let me just say it is a privilege to be here and to welcome all of you to this important event hosted by the Confederation of Industry and the Brookings Institution. And I wanted to thank Her Excellency Ambassador Mira Shankar in particular. I can think of no better steward for the U.S.-India relationship here in Washington. I had the opportunity to visit India just a few months ago as we began our planning for this meeting, for the bilateral U.S.-India economic and financial partnership meetings taking place here in Washington. And I was struck first and foremost by the aspirations and the entrepreneurship of young Indians. I had a particularly special time in a village called Sitara, just a few hours outside of Pune, with a women's rural cooperative bank named Mandeshi. At Mandeshi, they're using education, technology, and innovation to deliver financial services and insurance and pension services to women, many of whom have access to these services for the first time. And as a result, these women entrepreneurs are creating jobs while also providing stronger foundations for their children to lead better lives. It was a great learning experience for me and also a wonderful example of how partnership between our two countries leads to innovation that works in both. I also traveled to a cell tower where U.S. solar panels and batteries were working in partnership with Indian innovation to provide power in a way that was both green and cost-effective while helping to spread mobile telephony to India's rural communities, with potential, I think, for the spread not just in India but all over agricultural communities in some of the poorest parts of the world. These are just a few of the hundreds of amazing stories of U.S. Entrepreneurs and innovations joining with those from India, not only to create new markets, but also to help young families achieve their dreams. And they are a testament to the potential of our burgeoning economic and commercial relationship. As the ambassador said, Indian exports to the U.S., U.S. exports to India have increased multiple times over the last decade alone, and combined bilateral U.S.-India foreign direct investment grew by 165% over the last 5 years alone. These are striking statistics. But we cannot afford to be complacent. Make no mistake, they represent only a fraction of what is possible in the U.S.-India relationship. With shared commitments to democratic values and to market economies, with shared traditions of entrepreneurship and innovation, President Obama has put the highest priority on deepening our trade and investment ties to realize the full potential of what he called the indispensable partnership between our two great nations. It's this potential that we are seeking to nurture through our economic and financial partnership. With a full day of meetings between the senior-most leaders of our economic and financial teams, this represents the highest level economic summit between our countries to date, and we are very grateful to Finance Minister Mukherjee for heading up the very senior Indian delegation. To realize the full potential of this relationship is going to require reinvigorating our mutual commitments to domestic reform across financial services and the economy more broadly. We are going to continue and deepen our collaboration in the Financial Stability Board, in the IMF, and of course in the G20, where the U.S. and India, based on our shared growth models powered by domestic consumers, by markets, by innovation, we've worked together to advance our goals of more balanced growth, and where I've had the pleasure of collaborating with my Indian colleagues, Mr. Gopalan and also Subir Gokarn, both of whom I think will be very interesting speakers later today. I would also note one other very special part of my visit to Sitara. When I arrived at the site, there was a brightly painted bus, which serves as Mandeshi's mobile business school, full of smiling young women, hard at work, learning skills that would help them and their families attain better lives. Above the rear door was painted the words, "In memory of Brooke Shearer." It was a very fitting tribute, I think, to Strobe's wonderful wife for all her work to improve the lives of these women in rural India. It was also an important symbol of Strobe and Brooke's incredible devotion to India. I want to pay tribute in particular to Strobe for the clarity and consistency of his vision of a vibrant U.S.-India partnership and his work to promote it. I think it is fair to say he transformed Brookings into one of the best places in the United States when it comes to thinking on the U.S.-India partnership. And, of course, he's carrying that work forward with Kamal and with Martin, as well as I have to give a special shout-out to Ishwar, my former colleague at Brookings, and I think in partnership with some of the best think tanks and academics in India. Thank you, Strobe, for your continued commitment to the India relationship. And I think, indeed, Strobe is one of India's greatest friends in this country, and this prize that he just received is very fitting. And I also want to thank CII for all the work that it has been doing over many years, and which I benefited from in my own thinking and experience with India. Secretary Geithner is looking forward very much to joining Finance Minister Mukherjee for the closing session on this stage later today. Until then, on behalf of the United States Treasury and the Obama administration, welcome to all of you, and especially to our esteemed guests from the Government of India. And let me just close by echoing the words of our host, Mr. Chris Gopalakrishnan. Let's take the U.S.-India partnership to a new plane. Thank you.
Lael, I'm personally very appreciative of what you said in the course of your remarks, and touched, of course, by what you said about Brooke. My late wife had an Indian family from the age of 18 on, so I feel as though I'm kind of part of that very large family, or that very small village, as I think of it, with 1 billion people in it. Let me pay tribute again to Chris for running a very tight ship. He wants to keep us on schedule. He's given us exactly 2 minutes a break, which will give Dr. Basu and Kamal Dervish a chance to come on and set up the next panel up here. So we're off to a great start, and go grab some coffee.